What's going on, y'all? You are listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. I am your host, number one, joined by 1A. I'm Jeremiah Mitchell with Jeremiah Harding. How's it going, man? How are you feeling today?
Reasonable, you?
I'm doing all right. I feel a little occupied, just a busy sort of feeling in my head, basically, thinking about this week coming up. But yeah, I'm doing well. Life's good. Kid's good. He's healthy. He's fun. I had a really great time with friends this last week. So yeah, doing pretty well. Feeling healthy. Weather isn't too hot. Man, everything's just perfect. If we could just get rid of the state that just one little annoying little tick in my life, I think things would be just right.
Yeah, the weather's 93 over where I am right now. So I don't know, like, I don't know if that's hot compared to where you are right now. Is it about commensurate?
Yeah, we've had a bit of a no, it's cooled down. We've had like a cold front that came in. So it's today is like low 80s, but it's gotten down to 60s and stuff. So I don't know if we've been doing weather reports regularly enough so that our listeners can know what the weather is on where we're when we're talking and where we're talking on the day they're listening. I know that was started out as a really important element of the show, and it's sad when we get away from it. And if you can't get your weather reports from podcasts, where can you?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's and my weather's going to change soon because it looks like if this opportunity lines up that I'm in talks about, I'm going to say, that I'll be moving to New Jersey with train distance to New York. If I do that, then I certainly won't be as warm as I am normally.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be a lot different. For sure.
Yeah.
But where you live sounds miserable. You prefer wearing lots of clothing anyway. So that'll work out a little better.
It's more styled choice than it is anything like, you know, weather related. Because my normal thing is if it's cold out, I have a window open and a fan on. And if it's hot out, I have a window open and a fan on. So, like, it can never be cool enough for me, I don't think. Like, everybody's complaining about global warming because it's going to melt shit and the sun's going to be reflected and we're going to have a mini ice age. And I'm like, bring it.
Yeah. Yeah, my style clothing choice is like free t-shirt, which is what I'm wearing today. I think I have a second one just like this, and I wear them regularly because cheap. It's also a nice material. If you give away free t-shirts that you want people to actually wear, make it a nice material.
Yeah.
Some entrepreneurial advice out there. So today is August 13th of 2017, and just a few days ago, and yesterday and the day before, there were pretty significant marches and, for what we have today, riots in Charlottesville. Is it North Carolina? Virginia.
Virginia.
Virginia. Yeah. See, I say the word Charlotte, and I just think Charlotte, Carolina. One person died from a car that deliberately crashed into opposing protest group, and I believe two other people died in a helicopter crash that was observing the march/riot. So we will spend a little bit of time discussing that today.
Yeah. Like, what's sort of like the first thing I heard about the car was that he was a Bernie supporter, an open borders guy, and now what I hear from the SPLC specifically, so, you know, take it with a bucket of salt, that he was an alt-right guy who, quote, rallied with Vanguard, which is this white nationalist group. And so essentially they want to pin the whole thing as a giant bit of violence on the right, and they're not really interested in being objective.
Yeah, I don't know. I only have information thus far from kind of the mainstream media types and, you know, some Twitter images on the ground. And I don't know what to believe about what is being said simply because the hypocrisy of the mainstream is very obvious in terms of how they paint the left and how they paint the right. And the march was, I mean, there were Nazi flags there, so that's pretty significant. Fascist.
Yeah, and there were Nazi flags, but there were also like other flags, like the American flag. And yep, so
Confederate, like, flag.
It really doesn't matter what flag you fly, as long as it's related to a government stance, it's going to have murder and be soaked with blood. You know, like, the idea that if it's not a Nazi flag, it's fine. If it's not a neo-Nazi, if it's not a white supremacist flag, it's fine, is so fucking ridiculous. We've got people constantly marching with the Soviet flag. We've got people constantly marching with the Chinese flag, you know, claiming that the Red Star is going to rise again and shit like that. And that's all fine, even though Mao Zedong was a mass murderer.
Yeah.
And even though the Soviet regime was also very murderous and starved people under the banner of communism, which is something that I would think they would want to distance themselves from. But, you know, nah, let's just call the white people bad because they did something. Because that's really what it is.
Well, I mean, communism is a bunch of white people doing something. The reason why I say the Nazi flag is so significant flying that is precisely because of the hypocritical cultural perception. Like, it takes it takes another level of, I don't know if it's courage, another level of passion to fly a Nazi flag than it does to fly an American flag because of the negativity surrounding it, whereas there's praise and worship of the U.S. flag. A bunch of fools. You pretty much, if you're flying a Nazi flag and it's not a parody, you're probably a white nationalist. You're probably a white racist. In today's day and age, that's just more than likely, that is something that you hold as some sort of banner. It's something really, your racism is something important enough to you to fly the Nazi flag, which signifies that in today's world. Although I hate the hypocrisy of, you know, communist flag is fine. The hammer and sickle is just as morally offensive and reprehensible as the swastika in terms of what it represents. And the stars and stripes are pretty bad too.
Did you hear about the company trying to reclaim it?
Reclaim the swastika? Nope.
Yeah.
I would not recommend that. Make a new symbol.
It was a symbol of love in most religions. It was a symbol of love in most religions before Hitler basically co-opted it, because he saw it in India in basically religious texts discussing the Aryans, which were supposedly the perfect race, and that's the reason he adopted it specifically. This company tried to like reclaim the swastika, and get this, all they did was put like the swastika facing rightward, which is not the way it would face in the original Aryan nations or in any of the other, in any of the scriptures, in any of the holy texts. The cultures that had adopted this before did not have it facing rightward, but this company had it facing rightward, and all they did was template the swastika in a rainbow with words like Zen, peace, and love on it. And it's like, well, your effort could have been nobler, but you just decided to make, like, no anti-Nazi sentiment in this shirt, and it just looks like you're saying, yeah, Nazis are peaceful, loving Zen types.
Yeah.
Good branding. I salute you.
Yeah, if you want to write an essay about it, I think that makes sense. But you're going to need to do a lot more communication than having the word Zen underneath it in order to sell people on the transformation and in order to kind of restore the original meaning of the swastika.
Yeah.
One thing surrounding this that's kind of annoying is all the people who are pale skinned, who consider themselves white. All their, I think we talked about this last week, but more moral posturing. It's like, oh, they feel this inner need to condemn racism in modern America, like it's some sort of obligation that they need to talk about how bad racism is on social media, as if that sort of makes them a good or noble person. You know what I mean? Like, everyone thinks this. 99% of the people in the U.S., I would guess, at least believe that racism is bad. Maybe it's not that high. I don't live in the South. Midwest is a little different than a lot of experienced people have in the South. But the vast majority of the public think racism is horrible. It's not that different than just saying, I condemn murder and murder is bad and people shouldn't murder, in terms of the cultural perception surrounding it. Sometimes I think people believe that killing people is more ethical than racism with the amount of time that is devoted to the discussion.
Well, certainly violence in general.
Yes.
You know, like the whole punch a Nazi thing, which, you know, I might actually be fine with in some aspects if they knew they were Nazis and if those Nazis had governmental power. But if it's just somebody that you're calling a Nazi, which is basically a smear now, and, you know, the word racism has lost all of its power, then you can't punch all Nazis, because you're basically going to punch anyone who's to the right of you and anyone who you think is to the right of you because, yep, you know, of your biases and perceptions, and you're going to fuck up. And you can't have a movement based on violence that's just misdirected constantly.
Yeah, that potentially leads into an interesting conversation about preemptive force as a means of defense, but we don't have time to go there today. The people punching Nazis are a bunch of commies. That's the thing. It's like, these people want to use violence to impose their will upon us, and we need to use violence to impose our will upon them. Therefore, they are bad. It's just more irrational inconsistencies. I want to talk about race a little bit, because it's really stupid, you guys. Race, the problem with racism, I don't think it will ever go away completely. It might, who knows? Lots of things have changed in the world that are pretty dramatic. But I don't see race relations improving in the future unless we totally change the way that we think about race. Race is an artificial, contrived way of categorizing people so as to divide them into different groups. It doesn't make any sense to divide people based upon their skin color any more than it does hair color or foot shape or toenail. Like, you should definitely talk in accurate terms about what people's physical description is, and it makes sense to acknowledge that people have different cultures, but that has nothing to do with skin color. It makes sense to talk about people being from different locations and having different ancestors. And these are all descriptors of reality. But race is a categorization. It is intended to divide. That is exactly what it does. It says you're in this group and you're in this group based upon these arbitrary physical characteristics that some people in some university decided were the delineation between groups of individuals. It's irrational to think about it that way. I tell people now I don't identify as white. I would say it is accurate to say that I have pale skin, but to call me a white person doesn't make sense. And thinking in these ways about groups is destructive. And when you think in divided ways, you're more likely to otherize people that are in the opposing group based upon something incredibly superficial. Thoughts,
well,
Harding?
You know, and the thing about the white slash black slash brown slash whatever thing is that what it does is it, first off, whiteness wasn't a thing historically. It was only made so that they could, around 1800, completely bar white people from being slaves in America. That was when the term really took root. And so, they started to say that anybody who was white or white passing couldn't be a slave, but anybody who wasn't could. And like, it's literally like a contrived term. So,
and the Irish were considered Negroes back in the day. That's a, you know, funny, an interesting thing. If you piece of information, if you don't know it and you want to understand just how arbitrary these divides are, the whites were, or the Irish were considered Negroes so that they could be slaves.
Yeah. Well, and so the idea, is already flawed, but you know, it's only politically useful. It's only useful. It was useful back then to enslave people, and it's useful now to make sure people are divided against
yes.
one another and don't recognize who their slave masters are. And so, like, it's still basically slavery mindset that has whiteness and blackness as concepts at all. But beyond that, you know, if somebody wants to claim, for instance, that it's anthropologically useful, for instance, to say that certain people are white and certain people are black versus, you know, any of
yeah.
these other races, then, like, it's still only
anthropologically useful.
It's still only anthropologically useful if you define them by the country of origin. And it's much more difficult to pinpoint somebody's country of origin than it is to take a look at them, say that their skin tone is darker or lighter than a perceived limit, and categorize them that way. It's much harder to say this person's genetic lineage traces back to Germany, or
yes,
this person's genetic lineage traces back to the heart of South Africa. You know, it's much more difficult to say, especially since the cradle of life theory, which is the theory that all life springs from Africa, has been challenged multiple times, specifically by the concept that there was an original primate-like, hominid-like skull found in China. And, like, several skulls were found after that, and they bore none of the characteristics except, you know, the fact that they were born of lineage traced along primates to the ones that came from Europe or Africa. So the theory that we all came from Africa is dubious at best, which it would explain why the cultural variations between East Asian populations and the rest of the world were so diverse and dense. Like, because they might be completely different speciations of the same creature. But that's not a political argument there. If anything, it disavows many political arguments, and it shows them to be left scientifically wanting. And that's not what people want. So all of these pro-science people who call themselves that because they don't disavow global warming, or because they're all for abortions, as many of those as people want, those pro-science people are often so anti-science that they let their politics interfere with any scientific inquiry.
Yeah. Yeah, the origins of humanity, I think, are still a long way from being decided. New information comes up every year that challenges prevailing theories. It's one of those things. I don't really know what exactly they know, but there's just so much information, and it's from so long ago. It's difficult to imagine coming to anything conclusively, even just about the region where humans, you know, first evolved into what we know today without a time machine or something of the sort. Let's bring Rollo on at like 4:35 or something like that. I'd like to mention just a little bit on the protest stuff. You know, this stuff, this violent outburst, this violence in between groups, this division and anger at different people between the commies and the Nazis and the alt-right and the progressive left. It makes tons of sense if you understand what politics is. It's a bunch of people looking to use the government as a tool to violently impose their will on others, to take the property of others by force, to force other people to obey their will and murder them if they resist. While a lot of people don't know this explicitly, and a lot of people, even when you explain it to them, they're scared to acknowledge it's true, so they just pretend it isn't. While they don't know it or say it or realize it in their conscious brain, I think their subconscious has an idea of what's going on. And I think it responds emotionally to what's going on, what these other groups are trying to do. They're trying to use violence to violate you. That's what they're trying to do. That should make you angry. And I think a part of your brain realizes that even when you can't put it to words. And this is simply the violence of politics being exhibited in the world when normally it's so deep under the surface, hidden by propaganda and paperwork and an air of authority and formality. But I wonder how much division there would be and how many marches we would see like this and how much protesting and murdering of people and hurting people and attacking each other because of the words that they say. I wonder how much of this would still be present in the case of a stateless society. Would their division and their passion for harming the other and sticking with their group at cost to the other group, I wonder how much would still be around. I would guess not much. And we tend to be, we're much more likely to be united with people, even people that we perceive to be from other groups, if they want us to be treated peacefully. I don't know. Maybe there would still be this sort of violent and destructive anti-human racism and group division in a free society. But I kind of doubt it because the incentive structure for it is removed.
Well, and you know, it wouldn't be what it is now, because what it is now is directly political. What it would be then would be, you know, voluntary segregation. And that, you know, that to me, I probably wouldn't engage in voluntary segregation on a racial level. You know, it's not my preferred mode of operation to avoid people because I don't like the way they look. But the idea of political racism is directly designed to create systems of privilege that benefit a group. And that's exactly what has happened in multiple ways with multiple people, multiple groups of people. Which is one of the fun things about modern racism. You can say that white people can't be victims of racism, and then you can be as openly discriminatory against white people as you want. And, you know, but whatever, that's ancillary. The point is that the reason people are racist primarily is because of what it can get them. And in a society free of government and with a people intent on maintaining that, racism wouldn't get them much. Like, because the group of, like, groups of racists, at least in the first world, are very small minority compared to the majority of the thinking populace, I would call them. And the idea of being racist when you can't, like, form a government to impose it, as in Nazism, or as in, you know, sort of racist East Asian imperialism, or as in the eminent domain theory that sprung from Manifest Destiny. If you can't get anything out of it because you can't get enough people to force your idea on everybody, then your idea will fail. And that's the point of anarchy, is that all of these ideas that use government as a crutch will fail. And racism is one of those. Racist societies are just that. They're racist societies. They're built around the concepts that their founders promote. And their founders promote these concepts because of what they can get out of them. And, you know, you remove that incentive to be a racist bastard, and you actually punch the Nazis and the state communists in the face if they rise to power, then you win. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a frustrating time, you know?
Time to bring on Rollo shortly.
Yeah. Well, sorry for all the victims in Charlottesville. Don't be violent, people. I wish they ignored. Aggressive. Yeah, don't be aggressively violent. I wish they did more ignoring of stuff like this. I feel like it would go away. It's such a great way to get attention if you are seeking it.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, all right. Bring Rollo on. You want to introduce him while you're bringing him on?
Yeah, Rollo McFlugel runs a Facebook page called Inside McFlugel's Mind, and he also runs a podcast and video page on YouTube with a co-host, Slappy Jones, and it's the Rollo and Slappy Show, I think that's what they call it. And they discuss anti-government and anarchist politics, and they come from a no-borders, not open-borders mindset, and they are going to discuss today private oil regulations. Well, he is going to discuss. I'm using gender-neutral pronouns when it's not even a thing. I'm so used to introducing people that way. But yeah, Rollo McFlugel runs multiple media outlets. He writes articles for his blog, and he's on today to discuss oil regulations. I think I hear you there, Rollo.
Yes, I'm here. Thrilled to be on with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Rollo. Rollo, is that am I saying it right? All right, cool.
Yeah, Rollo's good.
All right. Hey.
Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. You wanted to discuss private oil regulations?
Sure.
That sounds interesting. Yeah, what aspect of that are you going to discuss? It sounds like a very thorough topic.
Yeah, there's a lot of different directions we can kind of go with this. But I think generally a lot of people in the libertarian world kind of give the government a little bit too much credit with how much it regulates. And since they're not in certain industries, they don't understand all of the regulation that's going on. And a lot of it's actually private free market stuff that the government really doesn't have anything to do with it. So I think that, you know, talking about how the oil refining industry works, it really can pull the veil of mystery back about what's actually happening. So I think a lot of people think that the safety comes from the state and the protection comes from the state, the environmental protection comes from the state.
Yeah.
Really, it's the opposite that's going on.
Fascinating. So, I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So the big regulator that we use is, one of them. There's 1,000 codes and standards that we use. Some are private and some are, exclusively government and some kind of a market government kind of a mixture. But the big one is the American Society of Mechanical Engineers, or ASME. And they govern, they have a lot of codes actually, but it's normally things for construction codes, how to build things. And they got started in the late 19th century with the railroads. So you had the steam engines were pulling the trains, and a lot of the boilers would blow up. And so it would cause the trains, you lose property. It causes your lines to back up, and you're killing people. And also you know, those things kill your bottom line, and also isn't good for your for how much people trust your railroad. So a group of mechanical engineers got together, and they came up with a standard on how to build a boiler. And they said, if you build this boiler to this standard, we'll guarantee that you're not going to blow it up. And so obviously the railroad companies love that. The banks love that, and the insurance companies love that, because any business is normally taken out a loan normally.
Yeah. And so the bank wants anything like a railroad for sure.
Right. And the bank wants to buy insurance, and even the railroad or whatever business itself wants to buy insurance. And so insurance companies never want to actually pay out. So they want protection too. So it worked out extremely well. And over the years, the ASME, they built up their codes and standards and made it to now it's not just boilers. That's actually a section. The different codes are called sections. Section one is the boiler code. And we do have a lot of powered boilers in the refinery because we do use a lot of steam for various processes. But another big one is the Section 8, which is for unfired pressure vessels.
So what does the government regulation look like in that area? Are you familiar with that? Do they have standards for boilers in the refinery?
There's the National Board, which is a kind of a government thing, and they kind of provide a stamp.
Okay.
It's similar. You register with the state. Any pressure vessel or boiler, things like that you have. But also ASME has their own stamping thing. So actually my first job out of school was at an industrial repair shop, and I was in the safety valve shop. So that's, you know, provide pressure relief for equipment. So if you do overpressure it, the valve lifts and you relieve the pressure somewhere else. And we had an ASME stamp that we would stamp on the plate of any equipment that we would touch. And that is the business. If they lost that stamp, the ability to stamp that, then they lose their business.
Right.
So it's
and the state never loses the ability to stamp it, even if their stamp means nothing, even if it makes your product less safe, they still charge you to get their stamp on and have their approval. No incentive to be correct, really, other than a tiny bit of public pressure and maybe any personal integrity that people have, right. But who knows?
Yeah, what really saves any of the state regulation, as far as I'm aware, is that it's the businesses themselves want to stay productive. So,
and the there's tons of companies like the ASME that actually provide various sorts of regulations and stamps and just saying whether or not a product's safe. And anything from, you know, children's toys to the one that I use a lot is the electric stuff. There's UL. They provide a private, not regulation, but private approval of the safety of electric products like outlets and pretty much everything that you have going through your house goes through them. So I would say the private regulations are a big factor in keeping the rendering the government regulations kind of useless and making sure that products are actually safe.
I think I know what you're saying. Talking just there's a ton of different regulators out there. I don't know if you mentioned like UL or FM.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Are there other like private oil regulations that you're going to talk about other than like safety stuff?
It's more than just say, I mean, it's the ASME
and whether it works and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really to make sure it's protecting the business. API, the American Petroleum Institute, it's kind of a quasi one. It was started in World War One to make sure that the U.S. had some had enough oil to go around because of the war effort. But it was the businesses getting together and formulating, kind of normalizing a lot of things when they were starting to pull equipment together. And they realized that even the threaded connections and everything, that there was no standard there.
Yeah.
And so they helped to standardize everything. And even though that the state was involved in that, I think the existence of the ASME goes to show that it would have happened anyway, even if the state weren't involved.
Exactly. Many times businesses are incentivized just by the market to standardize and make things easier for their customers. And it's cheaper for them. It helps their bottom line to work together. I mean, they aren't just out to get each other. Not like the state. I mean, you see, standardization is all over your home that you don't even realize. And it has nothing to do with state regulations. I mean, look at, I have four USB devices plugged in right now. All standardized.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah, and the businesses all work together. There's a lot of things, especially with dealing with corrosion. A lot of it's still kind of a black magic. There's a lot of things with pretty good ideas how the corrosion mechanisms work. A lot of other things, it's really – the theory behind it's really tough. So it's you're looking at cases of failures where you're getting your information. So you're it's constantly being updated. But all the businesses have an incentive to share that because what happens in another plant is likely what's is going to be what's happening in your plant. So you want to know that. And there's all sorts of conferences, too, where you go and share information. I mean, we use Chevron produces a lot of standards itself, and it gets distributed out among other refineries. I'm at a small merchant refinery.
Okay.
So we're not connected to any, like, the big super majors or anything. We're just a single refinery. With no upstream side, so we just take the crude oil and refine it. We have to buy it. So we have plenty of standards from all over the place that we're working with.
Well, and you know, also the idea most people resent bureaucrats in the regulation business and government because they know that they're going to come in, they're not going to know the industry well, and they're going to, you know, talk to experts which really know what they're talking about, and it's going to be very inefficient with lots of unnecessary middlemen. But in a society with, like, for instance, totally unrestricted regulation market, people would be able to compete for being the best regulator, and people would resent them less because obviously that person has a track record and their business of regulators has a track record of being valuable to companies. So people would have a lot less animosity toward regulation if it came from a private institution, and nobody would touch businesses that weren't regulated.
Or they would if the business had proven over time that it was self-regulating in the market.
Right. Yeah.
And that happens a lot. I mean, it's just a drill. It's funny. I'm like, do you have anything else other than safety? But it is what's drilled in our head
every day. I was wondering about just how they interact. I don't know. I don't know what goes into refineries in terms of getting oil from different places, or if there were like laws between different oil companies or something like that. So carry on. Safety gets drilled into your head.
Yeah, it's funny because it's when I'm at home or with other people and you see them doing something that we would never be allowed to do at the refinery, if you feel really uncomfortable. It really is. They drilled into your head. If everyone has stop work authority, if you can't do it safely, it's not worth doing. You know, you want to go home in the same way you came in.
Yeah.
Even they have me, they drilled into my head that I hold on to the railing when I walk up and down the steps. And it's little things like that.
Yeah.
We've had accidents. I mean, we've had injuries where I work. But nearly every single one of them is someone doing something that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
Not following the rules, you know, trying to take a shortcut. It's really fun, but it's – and the other thing too is what really aggravates me is when an industrial accident happens. And I only work at one place,
right.
So I don't know what happens in other companies. I'm sure there are companies with bad safety policies. But when people just come out and say, oh, they didn't care about the employee. I'm a reliability engineer, so I'm the one that – you know, was keeping the stuff in the pipes and preventing explosions, making recommendations, sometimes for doing repairs. We're welding on live piping, sometimes like a live, welding on live gasoline lines. So it's if something goes wrong and someone gets hurt in that situation, that's on me. And regardless, I'm not even talking about going to prison or getting fired. If someone got seriously hurt doing a job that I said that it was okay to do, I'd be on suicide watch. So I always take the, I always think when I'm going through work, recommending something, if I'm not willing to stand right next to that guy who's doing the actual work, I will not tell him that it's okay to do it. And most of the engineers, all the engineers, and that's really the way the company, or at least where I work. And I think that's throughout the industry, how they approach it.
Yeah, I used to not care about safety at all, but now I have a 9-month-old and I can't stop thinking about it.
Right. Yeah, it's as you start getting more responsibility and everything, and the company, well, one, it's people like me who worked up into management and now running things that they were in the same spot as I was, and they care about the people that work for them. And also, the bottom line is, if you're hurting your employees, it hurts your business a lot. It's no way to run a business.
Right.
I know Mike Rowe, it was a couple of years ago. He did a TED talk about workplace safety, and it was when he was first doing the deadliest catch, and they put him out on the deck, and all the waves were crashing and everything, and everything was nuts. And he said he went up to the bridge, talked to the captain, and he said, "Captain, OSHA?" And he said he laughed at him and said, "Son, I'm here to make you money, not to keep you safe." Huh. And he talked about how it's kind of the responsibility of the employee to make sure that, you know, you're kept safe. But I think he missed the point a little bit, because if the captain got all of his guys hurt, one, I'm sure they're his friends, so I'm sure he cares about them. But two, if a lot of his crew got hurt, then he's got to go back into port and he can't make money. So it was actually DuPont did something pretty interesting back in the day, where they would house all of the managers for the plants on the location of the plant. So if something blew up, it was their houses, their lives, and their livelihood that went up with it.
Huh. Wow. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to transition a bit, Rollo, unless you have any questions related to this, Harding.
Oh, well, just not really a question. I was going to make a snarky comment about how all the leftists would call that feudalism, but, you know, that's because they don't understand what feudalism is. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I saw a little bit. I did not look into it. I saw Eric July's side of this, a little bit of a... border article, and I can't have you on without talking about that. I'm a fan of Eric July mostly because I like metalcore and I hate the state, and he seems to like and hate those things too. So I follow him, but I'm pretty anti borders myself. I don't think enforcing state borders is obviously inconsistent with anarchism, and the idea that there would be anything close to it, even remotely representing state borders in a free society, is absurd. But will you tell us just what happened there? I think you wrote an article, and I'm interested. So,
okay, so just to make my position clear on the whole borders thing, just like anything else, if you ask me right now, should the state do X, Y, or Z? I will say no. So that include, you know, I know that we have got all sorts of welfare issues and situations and terrorism and all that kind of stuff. But if you ask me, should the state right now regulate who and what goes across the border? I will say no.
Yeah. Should the state implode? That I will answer in the affirmative.
Yeah. So there was a, I guess about 6 months ago, maybe it was December or January, that Jeremiah did a debate with some of the guys from Liberty Hangout about the borders, and Eric July was the moderator.
Yeah.
Eric kind of, at one point, kind of gave his view on how the borders should be handled in his view. He said that, you know, and I don't doubt that he's in favor of privatizing the borders and getting rid of the state. So I don't want to.
I think they all are.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
But the way he explained it, it seemed, because he said, I used to be open borders, but then I changed my mind. And, you know, I agree with Justin and this situation kind of thing, that we got these issues. And, you know, the Mexicans, they're not exactly capitalists coming over, so they vote for more of the state. So I thought I did what any reasonable person would, and interpreting that as saying that, all right, well, I want private borders and I want no government. I want no state. I want no political borders. Right now, the situation is that we got to have the government do something. Doesn't mean a lot. I don't know exactly what it is, but that's how I interpret it.
Yeah, I wanted to remark on that briefly. Like, that's what it seems like with a lot of these people who aren't open borders, who are anarchists, who talk about having the borders privatized, but also not having the government do anything to control the border. It, like you're saying, it's really difficult to nail down exactly what they mean, even what they're trying to communicate when they say that, because it sounds like when they talk, when they share what they think, it sounds like they want the state to control the borders and to determine who's in and who's out. But then they kind of talk around it so that it's rather unclear what their actual argument is, at least to me.
Sure. And I think it's just a strategy thing, in which case I just think that their strategy's incorrect.
Yeah. Or they don't know what they're talking about.
Right. I think a lot of it is that I don't know how many of them actually read Hoppe and his views on it, because he does advocate for the state to have some control over the borders until you can have a better situation. But it doesn't seem like a lot of them actually read what he said. They just probably picked up some memes. And I have no idea if Eric July, you know, what his familiarity with Hoppe is, not trying to say one way or the other.
Yep.
So, as a lot of people probably know, Eric and his band Backwards had a gig in Toronto, and they got stopped at the border. One of their members apparently had a DUI from 6 years ago, and in Canada that's a felony. I need 10 years for it to clear. So they were kept out of the country and couldn't play their gig, which is terrible. And regardless of what your position on the borders is, it shouldn't happen to you.
Right.
And it's really messed up. So I wrote an article, tried to make it a teaching moment for libertarians, as I put it, to say, hey, you know, I know it's a lot of libertarians say that, you know, right now we need the state to manage the border a little bit just so it protects certain things. But when you give the state any sort of power, it doesn't treat it well. And it's normally going to kind of blow up in your face a little bit. So I said, Eric July is sympathetic to the view that, you know, the state should manage the border in some certain way until a better situation materializes. And he did not like that. Called me a liar, called me fake news and everything. And my immediate response was, because the big mistake I made was I did not link to that the video.
Yeah.
Where he said what he said.
Have you looked back? Did he?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes. So
okay.
What I did was I took out references to him advocating for that position. And I just said, some libertarians say that. And I wrote a little note at the top, said, you know, July disputes this, and I'm going to find the spot where I said. So yeah, I did find the video.
Good.
And I tweeted at him and said, is this still your position? And he said, yes, it is. I've explained this, you know, a million, I'm mashing, you know, a bunch of tweets together that he said.
Okay.
I explained this a million times to people, and I've never advocated for the borders, and you're lying. I said it's right there in the video what I said. And, you know, there are other people chiming in, and I kind of let them talk to him because I'm not trying to create an enemy here.
Yeah.
Considering that it's the position that I thought he had is something that's normal for a lot of libertarians, despite the fact that I think it's wrong, I didn't see it as being a huge slur. I hope that he's on my side for it. I think that would be great. He just kind of – I get if he had a lot of people not understanding what his position is that he would be upset. I don't really criticize him for lashing out a little bit, but I don't know. We never really got a resolution.
Okay.
I'm confused just by Twitter's hard to express what your view is.
Yep.
But I listened to what he said in the video about 5 to 10 times.
That's doing your due diligence.
I don't think there's any way a reasonable person would get, you know, anything other than what I got out of it. And if it was a misunderstanding, and it was the other first thing I said, you know, if I misunderstand your position, I apologize. It kind of just died out from there. He hasn't responded yet, which is fine. I don't need it to keep going.
Yeah.
It's nice when
things kind of die sometimes.
Yeah. And I love the fact that he's got a commercially successful anarchist band. I think that's awesome. So
yeah, for sure.
You know, I don't know if I don't know if Eric.
And you know, multiple responses to that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go Harding. You've been silent.
The line is very slow right now, so like there was a delay, and I didn't know when I was interrupting anybody. But
I could tell.
Yeah. So like multiple responses to that. The first response is, you know, I know exactly what that kind of line can be, and like if you have never spoken up for borders, but you've never actively denounced them, then I don't know how that couldn't be a possible thing still. It's nothing definitive. And the second point is that the video doesn't make the case that he is anti-borders. And, like, his position that he stated there doesn't make that case at all. And so the idea that he's saying he stated his position and he's explained it, maybe he should say where, and he should point to where he actively spoke out against borders, because that's what I did. I spoke out against borders, and I spoke out, and Justin and fucking
Jared,
Chairman Howe, I forget his, yeah, Jared, they both spoke up for them. And while Eric didn't actively say he supports borders, he actively said he agreed with those who did and disagreed with my positions that borders shouldn't be a thing, because essentially once you privatize the borders, you're allowing people to trap people in smaller regions. You're creating fiefdoms, essentially, and that's fucking retarded if you're an anarchist. But like, and I gave him the opportunity to have a second, more personal conversation with me, for basically a part two, and he took me up on it verbally and hasn't gotten back to me since. So I don't know. I don't mind stirring the pot a little bit here, because I'm sensing a trend that it's something that he starts talking about, and when somebody asks him to get definitive, he'll say, you know, he'll have a discussion with them, but then it'll die off. And I think that that's just an I don't want to talk about it sort of thing, which is ironic since he was saying that the reason I wanted the debate to happen in the first place was because I didn't want the subject to be discussed, you know, that I wanted people to shut up about it. And he's not being very vocal about any definitive positions here. So that's ironic.
Yeah, Yeah, it's difficult to imagine what these people even think a free society would look like, as if you could have a border of any size where there weren't already rights of access homesteaded through it. It wouldn't make sense in a free society. It would, yeah, no one would be allowed in that someone didn't want to do business with, but someone will do business with everyone, pretty much. Unless they're an outright criminal or untrustworthy. We have all types of people entering a grocery store. It's totally unrealistic, I think, to believe there's any sort of privatized borders of any size would be possible in a free society and be adhering to the NAP and property rights.
Yeah, it's, you can look at situation. I don't understand the argument that they say, oh, well, I get what they're saying when they say there's no freedom of movement. You don't have a right to move around. It's a negative right. I get that. But I don't know what they imagine that a free society would look like. Well, we'll have private property everywhere. It's actually going to be more restrictive. Well, when you say that, it sounds like you're saying you can't go anywhere. I guess I get what they're saying is that you need permission. But, I mean, I don't need explicit permission to go to the grocery store. Or
no, you have implicit permission from the grocery store to go there. Right. And by building their property where they did, you know, in an already established region, they have, just by nature of driving to the property, have formed a homesteaded right of access to that property. Yeah, you don't have freedom of movement, but you can homestead rights that involve other people's property, even if you got there first. And all, you know, that these things have been built into contracts for many, long before the state ever existed, in terms of home contracts and property land contracts, that the purchase of it comes along with certain rights, and everyone in the area has to assent to that.
Absolutely. Because why would you want to live in a place where no one's allowed to move around or no one's allowed to do anything, and it's just all someone builds a wall around your house? It just, I don't really see anyone doing
that. Anarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. The argument that, like, I think makes them feel like they're the big kid in the room. Border advocates kind of remind me a little bit of statists in general, which might be telling, where they sort of act like it's childish to support open borders sometimes, and that, you know, a rational, practical, pragmatic adult obviously, you know, doesn't want to allow people who support big government coming into the country. As if getting the state to do anything about borders is actually going to help shrink the size of the state. As if they are concerned about keeping the commies out and only letting the ANCAPs in so we can have a higher concentration of ANCAPs to then secede from the state. As if that is a reasonable way to go about it, or a reasonable expectation to have of the state. Now, if you do want to build a wall, I could see you making an argument that during finals week, when all the universities are in session, you just build a wall around all them and you will significantly decrease communist big government ideology. But other than that, I don't really see this working out very well.
Yeah, and just, I don't get where they say, and I know Eric mentioned this on that on the debate. He said, you know, all the studies and statistics show that these immigrants come in and they vote for socialism. I'd love to see those studies, because I don't know that that's the case. Are Cubans that, you know, take mattress rafts and trash and everything to float across to Miami to get out of the communism that's there? Or are they coming in and saying, oh, yeah, let's build exactly what we had in Cuba?
Well, and as opposed to what? As a vote for socialism, you mean they vote for the Democrats as opposed to the Republicans?
The Republicans.
They just vote for a different type of socialism is all. And I think you...
And
go ahead.
Yeah, and it's not like the current population isn't exactly voting for socialism right now either.
And Hillary if you're going to say that, popular.
Yeah. If you're going to say that you have the right to, you know, do some harm to someone or restrict their rights because they're going to vote for bigger government or they're taking welfare. So if it makes sense to not let people cross the border, then doesn't it also make sense to like sterilize people on welfare? Assuming that you know, because you're going to say, "Oh, the kids are going to be on welfare too." So if you're going to say, if you're going to make that argument, you keep going with it.
Well, it makes sense. Anyone who is going to vote for bigger government, even if they still live in the U.S., if you want to apply that argument consistently, then you have the right to use force against them to defend yourself by preventing them from going to the voting booth or by kicking them out of the country. If you want to go that far.
Right.
It doesn't. Who cares where they originated from their location? That doesn't matter. What matters is the initiation of force. Now, I could see. I think you could probably make an argument for that that has some rationale behind it. I don't know if I'd buy it. That
except that voting doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. Right, and it is a kind of an act of desperation for a lot of people. It's like a. Just a feeling, not hopelessness, but I can do nothing except cast this vote. This is the only power that I have to try to improve my life. I kind of equate it to slavery. Like if you can choose a master that you prefer, master A over master B, then I don't think it's the moral fault of the slave. It's the system of master slave that's the issue in the first place.
Yeah, you know, it's like Oliver Twist holding an empty bowl that used to hold freedom, and he's like, "Please, sir, may I have some more?" Voting is that.
Yes.
Yeah, and so I don't vote. I don't espouse voting at all. But
then you have no right to complain.
Yeah, of course. So I'll just shut everything off and be on my merry way. No, but if people want to go that route and. You know, knock your socks off, I say. As long as you keep in mind, you understand what voting is, and if I don't know.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's not going to get anywhere.
No, I don't think so. I thought about voting just because it would be funny to say I voted for Trump and then just troll the left, but I couldn't bring myself to even enter the voting booth, and I definitely couldn't have voted for Trump. There was a ballot initiative about. More funding in my area. That's why I thought about voting. But that just going there disgusted me. So
I just know the feelings that I have from past votes. Like this was before I kind of had my conversion into libertarianism and anarchy, but I voted for John McCain. Or no, who was 8 years ago? Mitt Romney. 8 years ago.
Yeah, that was 8 years ago. Wow.
And then 4 years ago, I voted for Gary Johnson, and that makes me feel, you know, a little sick too.
Oh, he was better 4 years ago.
He was better.
I voted
better.
Ron Paul in that election.
Yeah, I did too. Ron Paul and John Stossel.
I would have voted if I wish I went back and voted for Ron Paul if I was going to vote for anyone.
Yeah.
I considered voting for McAfee this time.
Oh, yeah. He would have been. I wish he got the nominee.
That would have been so funny. Party.
Well, I would have written him in, but I had to sort of slap myself like a dog and say, no, don't. You're going to sacrifice your principles by doing that, because let's say on an off chance he does get in, well, you just helped a person become a president. You helped get a ruler in charge. Congratulations. And let's say he didn't get in. Well, it would just be wasted time and yet more evidence that people aren't interested in rational politics. So I stayed home, but I also shared the shit out of his campaign video that said taxes theft. So, you know, whatever. I did my little political part last year, though I dislike the system and would never support it. I shared that videos like that because they were reasonable. but not because I actually thought he would get in or wanted him to be president. Just, but also, like, I have this image that I posted to Instagram where I listed a bunch of reasons Gary Johnson is not a libertarian, and it constantly gets me flack from people who are like, you know, who are you to lecture him? As though because he's involved in the party, he's an authority figure, which I wouldn't even respect anyway because I'm a disrespectful asshole. But, like, beyond that, his message is nil. And fucking McAfee
pathetic.
Yeah, McAfee and Daryl Perry, fuck, Mark Feldman, rest in peace, was better at conveying a message of big tent libertarianism than Gary Johnson. And so if they were trying to get the message across, then, you know, they would have even done better with him. You know, fucking Austin Peterson would have been better than Gary Johnson. But they went with Gary Johnson because he was entrenched in the party politics, and it sort of proves that the Libertarian Party is no different to any of these other parties, and they're really willing to capitulate to demand from the people associated with the higher ranks, because I guarantee you that John McAfee got a shit ton of votes. I know he got Adam Kokesh's support, and Adam Kokesh has mass populist appeal, not to mention McAfee's applause in the debates. You can't deny it. The LP is fucking bought. Same with all the other parties.
Oh yeah.
All right, guys. I got a jet. Rollo, you want to tell people where to find you? Sorry for cutting it off. We're past my curfew.
You go to mcflugel.com. McFlugel as in like Google McFlugel. Also, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/McFlugel, and on Twitter at Rollo McFlugel, all one word. So yeah, like Jeremiah said, we've got a blog, a weekly podcast, and also Slappy and I are in the process of writing a book on the case for libertarian open borders.
Well, all
so,
right,
cool. We've got about half of the words that we have planned in there. So when that comes out, we'll put it on blast to try to get the world to know about it.
Yeah, come back on and read us an excerpt.
Will do.
And also, what was I going to say? You don't just do podcasts either. You also do vlogs. So everybody subscribe to them on YouTube.
Thank you. Yeah, all those links are on the website, flugel.com. We've got a newsletter, too, you can subscribe to.
All right, sounds good. We'll link to that at the episode page. I believe this is episode 31, timetofree.us. Harding, anything you want to plug?
Moment of Rage with Jeremiah Harding. I'm about to start making videos. I just got most of my title animation done, and so I'm about to get very serious about YouTube, VidMe, Minds, and Steam it. And I'm on too many fucking networks. That's why I have so much latency between my responses to people. I need a staff. but like. So, like, I'll be posting a bunch of shit everywhere. I'll be writing articles. I'm in the process of writing books myself, and I'll keep everybody updated as long as they tune into those things regularly. They can hear about that sort of shit. And also Chain Reaction Podcast, which I'll be making a title slate for, I want to say, by the end of this week, so that you can play that as the beginning animation or, like, a wait animation for people while the stream is being prepared. So yeah, all that shit. Smash the state and fuck the borders.
All right. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter if you want at JeremiahJM. Otherwise, y'all, thanks for listening. Appreciate it. Hope you have a good week and learn to live a life you love. All right. Thanks. Peace.